And one other thing he left me, he said, the only difference will be your willingness to apply the political will. And I think that's what started it, is he tasked me with applying the political will. He says, you may not be an engineer. You may not have the expertise to design this according to traffic, but do you have the political will? Because that's what people will remember, and that's what gets it done.
Well, that's my guest, Suja Lowenthal. She's the vice mayor of the city of Long Beach here in Southern California. I'm your host, Frank Peters, and you're listening to CDM Cyclist, where people matter more than motor vehicles. And many in Long Beach are grieving today. A terrible plane crash claimed 5 lives yesterday, including the man who introduced me to Suja. That's Mark Bixby. Mark, I met him. He's a blogger. I met him online at first. Councilwoman Nancy Gardner here in Newport Beach introduced me to Mark, one of those electronic emails. And of course, one thing led to another. And, of course, Mark's been a guest on the show recently. But relative to today's show, he introduced me. He brought me to lunch one day. Suja was coming. We were out to celebrate a phone call that had gone, I think Mark might have said, I'll put some words in his mouth, surprisingly well with Caltrans and the Port of Long Beach regarding the redesign on the Desmond Bridge. Mark was fighting for bicycle and pedestrian access. The phone call went so well, myself, Alan Crawford, Mark, none of us wanted to part company. And he had lunch planned with Suja. Would I like to come along? Yes, I would. And I was so impressed to meet Suja. And at the end of lunch, it's just me and Mark and Alan again, and they both rather conspiratorially said, you ought to get Suja on your show. And so here she is today. You're the vice mayor of the city of Long Beach. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about Long Beach government. I'm curious. You have a mayor. Is there also a city manager?
We are a city manager form of government. We do have a citywide elected mayor, and we have a city manager who is the head of all of the department heads.
So he's like the executive.
He's the executive officer, absolutely, for our city. And then we have 9 council members, each elected by district, so we are not elected at large.
How do you describe your district?
My district is a microcosm of the entire city. I feel as though this is the second city. It is a snapshot of all of Long Beach. We have the downtown here. We have the Port of Long Beach. We have big businesses, small businesses, businesses of all sizes in between, historic neighborhoods, high-rise towers for residential living, high-rise offices. It's all here. And in terms of a 24-hour-a-day active lifestyle, people, this is the place where you can live, work, and play. So it's.
You've been a long-term resident?
I have. I've been here 14 years, I believe. Yeah, I've been a long-term resident. I grew up partially in India, and then grew up in Culver City and went to school in West LA, and then came here about 14 years ago.
In India with mom and dad as a child?
In India with mom and dad as a child. My entire family's there. I was born there and finished second grade and came here and started third grade. So spent a chunk of time there.
And how about your career in politics? Been at it a long time or?
I have been in elective office for 10 years. Yes, 10 years since 2000 and actually 2001. Yeah, 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
Yeah, I was on the school board for 5 years and right now on the city council for 5 years. So I've I'm an old girl. I've been around for 10 years.
And how about a professional career before politics?
So I'm an urban planner. I'm still an urban planner. I've been in water policy for about 12 or 13 years. A lot of my work has been in the area of the of water environment. I work actually now working with firms, design and engineering firms that work on transportation projects. So again, still in urban planning. And then I teach at Cal State Long Beach. I teach a public policy class this semester. I'm a visiting professor there.
Well, I get excited about that. That's fun when I get to talk to the college kids. You enjoy that too?
I do. Yeah. I do. It's inspiring. It makes the chaos all manageable.
It's a way to give back too.
Absolutely.
Influence.
And they're fresh, and it keeps me from getting discouraged.
Yeah.
I will leave it at that.
Yeah, sure. Well, today we're going to talk about bicycles. That's what the show's all about. And Long Beach, there's no two ways about it. You must feel proud, huh? Long Beach really demonstrating great leadership in the Southland, huh?
Absolutely. We are walking the walk and the talk, and we're very... Long Beach is a unique city. We always talk about the Long Beach Way, and in our particular example, it's a good motto, the Long Beach Way. I think we are leading by example. We are taking our Bicycle Master Plan very seriously. We are implementing recommendations and our aspirations to be a great bikeable city with infrastructure. And so we have we're holding ourselves accountable for a lot of this healthy lifestyle, active lifestyle talk that we promote.
Is that how it started? I mean, that's one benefit of it, but there's also like economic development. What were some of the things that got this train rolling?
Can I tell you truthfully, about 5 years ago, we had a visit from Mayor of Bogota, Colombia, Enrique Peñalosa, who was going to speak to the MTA about turning a built-out city into a bikeable city. And our visionary for the bike station, John Case, came to me and said, why don't we invite him to speak to a select group of individuals? We'll craft an invitation list from city leaders who are involved in planning and building and economic development, then we'll invite those from the private sector who are involved in planning and building and economic development and bring them together and hear what this inspirational man has to say. And we did that. We had about 50 people in attendance, very select group, and we hand-selected them because they all had some role in creating this city, in designing this city. And I've always had an interest in taking our bicycle master plan and having it be a very living, breathing document as opposed to something that sat on shelves. And he, to say he was moving is underselling the entire experience. One of the things that he left me with is you need to create a city where a 14-year-old child can navigate the city on bike or on foot without having to depend on an adult because he is too young to be carted around by his mommy. It's a little embarrassing.
Right.
And he's too old to be carted around by his mommy, and he's too young to get into a car and drive. How does that person navigate the city? So you think about your most vulnerable populations, whether it's vulnerable because they are wheelchair bound or vulnerable because they're stuck in their mobility options. You think of those individuals, and that's how you design a city. For me, that's how it started. It took a lot of these things that I had on the shelf as far as my dreams of what kind of city this could be to really talking about that being a possibility. And one other thing he left me, he said, the only difference will be your willingness to apply the political will. And I think that's what started it, is he tasked me with applying the political will. He says, you may not be an engineer. You may not have the expertise to design this according to traffic, but do you have the political will? Because that's what people will remember, and that's what gets it done.
Have you stayed in touch with him? He must be impressed with what he sees.
I send him updates by email. And have invited him to come back when he's back in Southern California to really see what he's trying. I will say he helped start that. Not that we hadn't already thought that those would be wonderful additions to our mobility options, but it really took someone who, in a breathtaking way, to say, you can do this.
I like the comment about 14-year-olds. Perhaps we don't think of them as like constituents their own class there.
Absolutely.
I haven't. I have a 15-year-old at home, and he just got his driver's permit yesterday. That's all he's dreamt about for a long time. So,
and that may not have been the case if perhaps he could do everything he wanted to without it.
Yeah.
You know, but you aspire to drive because you think there's this great liberation that occurs in terms of where you want to go and where you want to be. And that might be true in some sense, but it should not be true in a practical sense. And coming at it from where I stand as an urban planner, that's a dream come true for us, which is to really make a city, plan a city that is navigable to many constituencies. And
how about pushback? There's give and take. Mm-hmm. How have you dealt with that in the community? There are people who don't like bicycles and complain they run through stop signs. And
you know, there's an education that has to happen. As cyclists, we bear a tremendous responsibility to follow the law. We've never, as a city or city officials or representatives, abdicated that is the natural next step, which is you get to avert all laws. That's not, you know, we will always, always require everyone to follow.
But there are people out there in the community that will, you know, complain.
They will complain
about bad bicycle behavior.
And there's bad driver behavior.
Sure. That's the rebuttal, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Really. And I think we can all stand to learn to live in the same space together. And that's another thing Mayor Peñalosa really themed his talk around, which is, you know, you're designing a good city when you create opportunities for people to come out of their homes and enjoy the public space. So now this step, this tension that you're talking about, it is about how do we all enjoy the public space and make room for one another. And so there is an ebb and flow. There's an adjustment that has to happen on both sides or all sides. And we, some of us, have to relinquish this feeling that we have an ancestral right to the road. We all have an ancestral right to the road, you know, and so it is. It's about adjustments, and there is tension, but I think we're addressing that just in continually allowing people to come together and talk it out. Mm-hmm. We're actually hosting forums that will launch pretty soon about bringing folks together and talking about how mobility is changing and evolving in Long Beach. And that's the thing. We're not calling this just the bike lanes. We're not calling this just pedestrian access. This is about mobility, multimodal transportation opportunities, whether it's by foot, bike, car, three-wheeler, as Mr. Orduña has said, our 103-year-old cyclist.
Right. That was a cute story in the LA Times just yesterday. I have links on the blog to that.
Yeah, and again, can I share with you what's impressive? Sure. There's so many things that are impressive about him, but here you have someone who probably did drive most of his life, and he has willingly at some point, whether it was 20 years ago, decided, I'm not going to drive anymore, but I do need to get around because I don't want to be a dependent on my children or a nuisance, and I'm still healthy enough to do that. And those are options we should, if we afforded those options, I wonder how many of us would probably choose not to drive when it may be unsafe for us to. You know, again, it's about options.
Yeah, about choices, I like your comment about a city that's built out. I hadn't thought of it that way. Many communities in Southern California are.
Mm-hmm. They don't envision themselves beyond the roads and concrete that's already there, which, you know, if you come at it, if you think of urban planning as just assembling and reassembling, and you can spend 200 years assembling and reassembling the same space, and that's the beauty of it. And so I look at it that way, which is, sure, we are built out, but I can pick this up and move it somewhere else. And you have a completely different element that makes that space relevant to your constituency for the time. Mm-hmm. And so we are built out. And I had a city engineer that told me this is a built-out city. You will never see bicycle infrastructure the way you want to. And I just go out and take a look. That person was clearly wrong because that you can do that. You can reassemble.
It's normal for humans to resist change. Mm-hmm. It's like this for a while. You think it will stay this way.
We think bricks and mortar are permanent, and to some degree they are, but you can reassemble aspects of laid out infrastructure in a way where mm-hmm. you're creating brand new opportunities. And
so it takes a willingness to innovate and experiment. That sounds like a key factor.
It's the difference between mm-hmm. being a defeatist about how you see your city, it is the way it is, and being eternally optimistic about what your role can be right. in yeah. in designing a city that's relevant for your constituency mm-hmm. today and maybe a few years mm-hmm. ahead of you.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Bicycle Master Plan. Did you put that together in kind of like what they used to call a smoke-filled room? Or how did you go about involving, you know, transportation, urban planners, and the community? What's that process been like?
You know, that process has been pretty dynamic. It was not in a smoke-filled room. We have lots of community participation, and you have city staff that's spearheading that effort that is really not only open to community participation, but sees that as a key component to success.
Now, that's interesting. You say, you know, city transportation people mm-hmm. doing that. But in other communities, it's advocates pushing mm-hmm. and pressing. So Long Beach stands out in that regard, too.
I think we do. I think yeah. our timing is right. We have mm-hmm. those advocates, those strong advocates in the community. They have now come up in front of the doorsteps of the city hall where those on the inside can also be called advocates. That's a timing issue. You couldn't plan it better. We couldn't have known this, that this is how it would align, but right. it did, and right. we are running
Keeps
with
life
it.
Interesting,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, huh? And we're running with it. We have a city yeah. manager that's an avid cyclist. We have a mayor that enjoys cycling. We have me and others on the council.
You've got art outside the building.
Right.
Cycle.
That we right, we're so committed, it's pretty prominent on our city hall, right. the Penny Farthing.
That's right, Penny Farthing out there, which is kind of funny. The old-fashioned big wheel bicycle.
That's right.
So I wrote a blog post the other day and, well, yesterday. And then one critic, you know, blog posts often invite critical commentary, and that's fun, said, what if you put these sharrows to a vote of the public, implying that the public wouldn't go for it? You put sharrows in Belmont Shore. Mm-hmm. Would the public have gone for it? It was unknown at the time.
It was unknown. I'm not sure yeah. that they would have known enough to vote on something like that. Yeah. And my short answer to that is this is not Switzerland. We are not a direct democracy. You place a certain amount of faith in those officials you have elected so that you can step back and do the things you need to do to run your own life. Now, certainly there are some things that are appropriate to go back to your voters and say, what do you think? But if you did that for every piece of infrastructure, every shift here and there, we would have a city yeah. that comes to a grinding
That's
halt.
Right.
And what may happen is that you may have the loudest minority exercising some majoritarian whim by vote.
Right.
And that is not a well-planned city. We are suffering today from some actions, not voter-related, but really actions taken on a whim, our parking impacts. Are a clear result of bad planning decisions that literally feel like had happened overnight while no one was watching.
Yeah.
That is not what you want. As far as the sharrows are concerned, if you think about the 15 lights between Livingston and Naples, you'd never go more than 11 miles, 12 miles an hour anyway. This may have slowed you down 1 mile per hour.
Yeah.
There's so many lights in between
right.
that. So I think people have this unrealistic expectation or belief that their trek through Belmont Shore into Naples has been slowed down because of the sharrows. That's not true. They forget what it was like just before, which is it was just as slow anyway. Part of it is because we like to look and see what's going on. But the other part of it, there's so many lights. I mean, it's the shortest
yeah,
block
right.
Scheme in our city. We have a lot of lights
mm-hmm.
and for a reason. And if you need to go somewhere and you need to boogie fast, that's not a street
right.
I would take, whether the sharrows were there
street.
Or not.
That's right.
So I think people look to blame, and you know, they just forget, what was last year like on that same street?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have to make better choices. If your day includes getting through those 1.5 miles in record speed, then you'll want to avoid Belmont Shore anyway.
And you're getting good feedback from the cycling community? You're seeing more people take advantage of them,
absolutely.
Huh?
Yeah. You know, there's been a strong advocacy group in the cycling community that's been, you know, the edgy, artsy group. And it's very nice to see this enter mainstream options. It should be a mainstream option. We always ask ourselves the question, what happened to our kids riding their bikes to school? There's a lot of social and cultural reasons for that. Maybe not cultural as much as it really is the reality of growing up today. But can we design a city that gives that option to parents, that there are safe routes for their kids to go to school by bike?
Because everyone, well, my age, did that.
You did that.
I rode my bike a mile to a bus stop, mm-hmm. and then took a bus to school. And it was great, great time. And I think my teachers appreciated that I had been on a bike for half an hour before I got to school.
Kind of
take the fight out of me a little bit. So I tell my son his teachers will appreciate it when he bikes to school. But so how about all this bicycle development in town? What are the economic development? Are you seeing economic development correlations, or is that just wishful thinking by these advocates?
I absolutely think there's an economic development correlation. We have now opened up our city to an entire constituency of folks that believed that the city was not welcoming and receptive to masses of cyclists. And we're seeing that more and more. We've had the Amgen tour that's been here as Long Beach as a destination. There's a vibrance to having a bicycling race here that, not to take away from the Grand Prix, it is a different kind of vibrance. This is about health and lifestyle. And it speaks to really, I think the core of who we are as a city. We're a coastal city. Why wouldn't we be a cycling city?
Sure.
So in terms of capturing the concept of recreation as being economic development, cycling adds that. We're probably the capital of alternative sports anywhere. We have our roller derby female teams here. We have our skateboarders. We have our snowboarders. We have champions in all of these sports that actually live here. Now to actually design a city where not only can they live here, but they can actually work here. That is their work, and also play here. That's economic development. We have opened ourselves up to gatherings and conferences of these groups that will now come to celebrate their cycling passion, but do it in Long Beach. And the second district, which is where the downtown is 100% parking impacted. So I think it is an economic development tool to make it easier for people to navigate this part of town without worrying about where they're going to park their vehicle.
So 100% parking impacted, that means?
That means that you have homes that don't have parking. You have homes that were torn down in the past where there's a 10-plex now with zero parking. Oh. So all the street parking is taken up just about in these adjacent neighborhoods. So you come in and you want to navigate the downtown, spend some time there, you can go to a parking lot, or you can take your bike and move around from spot to spot.
Right. So that's an advantage for people that want to keep their cars.
Mm-hmm.
They should encourage cycling because that frees up parking places for them.
I think so.
Where do you go from here? You've got your bicycle plan, mm-hmm. and how are you going to continue to evolve that as turnover happens in city government? How do you see bicycle leadership continuing into the future?
If it isn't already, it is part of our brand. It will be hard to unwind a positive aspect of our brand. I truly believe this is a positive aspect of the Long Beach brand, Long Beach Way. And so in terms of where do we go from here, I would like to see our access from North Long Beach down here, more connections that way, where mm-hmm. you can, should you wish, come from the top of the town to right here in the downtown. You can do that. And so I think those are our next steps, which is providing those options, safe options, where people can actually come to work or go to school.
How about advice for your peers that might be listening to the show here? Many communities in the Southland watching what's happening in Long Beach. maybe they haven't gotten started yet, how would you suggest that they take the first step?
And we come into this office day after day with this approach, which is why not? That is the only question as a civic representative, as an elected official, that I have said that I have to ask. Because a lot of times we expect our officials to give us the 101 reasons why something cannot be done. We make it a point here to say, why not? Prove to me why not. And in terms of advice, truthfully, as Mayor Peñalosa said, you are elected to exercise political will. You need to exercise that in terms of a spine. And that's what he said to me. You have to get a backbone. And if it's the right thing to do, the only thing you are called on doing is providing that political will. And that is your job. That's what you were elected to do. You weren't elected to be an engineer. You weren't elected to design the bridge. You weren't elected to even design the Sharro. There are other people around you that you can call on to do that.
So leveraging that political will.
Leveraging the political will with the talent pool that exists, whether it's in your traffic division, your engineering division, your public works division. And truthfully, I will tell you, when you start showing political will, City Hall lights up. There are employees here that have been waiting for leadership. They've had all of these wonderful ideas, the Sumi Gantz of the world. You know, she is our mobility person here, Charlie Gandy. They have had these hopes and aspirations. What they've lacked is someone or a group of individuals elected to come forward and say, yeah, let's do that. They need cover, and that's part of giving political will.
So you're finding enthusiasm, encouragement, commitment from the city staff.
Absolutely. They don't feel put upon. They actually feel liberated. One of the first things I said to Sumi Gantt was, I know you've had these dreams in a box on a shelf. Let's take them down. Let's take them down and talk about them. You know, there's initially that hesitation because they seem lofty. So as long as
So that creates all kinds of positive side effects besides just bicycling, huh? When people have ideas and see them
and they're celebrated for it. Yeah, sure. Right. I can only imagine how amazing that must feel, going down the street saying, I've wanted to do this for years and now we're doing this.
Yeah, that's great. How about, let's close out with, you had a bike as a kid?
I did. I grew up, part of my childhood was in India. We did not have a car, just like most people of our economic ability did not, and we navigated our entire lives on bikes. I had a little kid seat on my father's bike. That's how I went to school. That's how I went to church. That's how we did everything, even grocery shopping with the baskets and all of that. So I'm very accustomed to how that is more than recreation. And I did have a bike after immigrating here as a kid, but didn't do all those things like go to school and everything, just because where I grew up didn't have the safe infrastructure to get to and from school. So I'd like to change that. Mm-hmm. Maybe go back to how great things were. There are so many things about our past that shouldn't be left behind. Progress does not mean leaving all things behind. Progress means finding a way to bring some of those gems into the future. And I think cycling is one of them.
Thank you very much for joining me on the show today, Suja.
Thank you.
We're back in the studio, and I'd like to say thank you to my sponsor. That's BikeTiresDirect.com, an e-commerce site. It's not your father's bicycle store. It's, of course, an online experience where, like the name implies, they sell tires and road gear and equipment and apparel, everything you need to equip your bike safely. Check them out, please. BikeTiresDirect.com. Well, the city of Long Beach, it's lost a tremendous bicycle advocate this week. But in some ways, maybe we can see that the issues that Mark fought for and cared so passionately about, there are others in the city that will continue to champion these causes. I'd like to hear from you. Come to the website, please. It's cdmcyclist.com. Come and leave a comment behind. Well, that's it for tonight's show. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.